You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 186. Today's episode's all about the sport of rugby in New Orleans. It's a topic I don't know much about, but I've been interested in it for a while. The last show featured the same guest as this one. It was about the dining and drinking scene in New Orleans, and it featured Ian McNulty. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. We had a lot of fun talking about things that have happened since COVID, and how we even went all the way back to Katrina and talked about new and exciting things. There's a lot to check out. Make sure you have a pen and paper ready for that one, because there's a lot of places you're going to want to check out. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a really cool combination of a blog and an online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. And through November 5th, 2023, their current exhibit is about the women's right to vote. We did an episode a couple of episodes back all about it. The 19th Amendment granted American women the right to vote in 1920, but Louisiana law has effectively disenfranchised black women. And the podcast episode, as well as the exhibit, is all about the fight for essentially the next 80 years or so that black women in particular went through to go through poll taxes and all the barriers that prevented them from being able to vote, and essentially continued that fight until they felt somewhat satisfied through the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The exhibit has a decades-long story through objects, images, and documents, as well as interactive displays. It's really good. It's a fun exhibit to go check out. And as always, everything at the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. Longtime listeners probably remember the crew at Two Chicks Walking Tours. They have small, intentionally small tours. They limit it to 14 people, and they'll go out on a tour if a single person is booked. The city requires or has a maximum of 28 people, but Two Chicks limits 14 is their max, so you're guaranteed to get a small tour, and you might end up as the only person. Their experience is a focus on the Garden District and the French Quarter neighborhoods. They also produce private curated walks, so you can call them up, call Christine Miller, the head chick in charge, and talk about what you want, and she can put together a tour for one person or up to 200 people divided into groups when she's asked to. The team is female-led. They have one rooster strutting around. They have a bunch of tour guides from before the lockdown. They even have a listener of the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast, Kieran Pittman, who has become one of their tour guides. Find out more at twochickswalkingtours.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. The most frequent questions I get are actually not about food, Ian, but they are about moving to New Orleans.
Okay.
If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the right fit for you can be a little bit daunting. Liz somehow makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Many, many members of our Facebook community and our podcast listeners have done just that, and they were very happy. I know you will be too. The other thing that sets Liz apart is she really helps you become a part of the community. She does lots of events for the people that she works with. She often drags me along, so I get a chance to meet people that maybe you found out about Liz through the podcast. She really does a great job of helping you make New Orleans your home. Next up, when you're looking for a home to purchase, you're probably going to need to secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on a refinance a couple years ago, and it was as smooth as could be. We recently went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a new home, and it was just as easy. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at golfbank.com, and I'll put a link to make it easy. And now let's get on to today's topic, rugby. As I mentioned, I've been interested in a while. I know there's a vibrant scene in New Orleans, but I don't know much about it. To help, I'm welcoming back a guest from our last episode, known for his coverage of the food scene, Mr. Ian McNulty. Ian, how are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you for coming back.
Sure.
Good to have you back so soon. As we recently discussed that you cover food and dining, but today I want to talk about your interest in rugby.
Yeah.
So first, how'd you develop an interest in the sport?
Okay, so rugby is one of those things that, in the U.S., it's a bit of an outlier, right?
Yeah.
It's always like maybe the fifth or sixth sport that people think about, depending on where they are, But for me, it was Well, I had a cousin, older cousin, that I looked up to and idolized. And in college, he played rugby. And I thought, well, that sounds amazing. I didn't even know what it was. But the name rugby sounded rugged, you know, and it sounded fun. And then when I was in college, I picked it up for a little while and played a couple semesters of very, very casual, loosely organized, you know, intramural kind of club rugby.
Sure.
So it let me know what it was. And what it was a lot of running around, a lot of tackling, and then like a lot of like really good guy camaraderie and gal camaraderie with the women's team, and parties, and just like being part of something that felt different from what the mainstream was doing, right?
Sure.
And it was very accessible too, as somebody who, like, I did a lot of high school sports, you know, never star athlete by any stretch of the imagination in any comparison, but I really enjoyed my time with it, and it was a way to get another taste of that without trying to do varsity sports in college. And honestly, I put it all on the back burner. I mean, after college, I forgot about it. And years went by. And here's the twist, actually, on this tale. Hurricane Katrina happens in 2005 in New Orleans. I've been living here for quite some time.
Right.
After the storm, you know, like flash forward a year or so, I did find myself dealing with some personal issues related to kind of the stress and trauma of it all. Not just the storm, but the aftermath and living in a city that was essentially a catastrophe for all that time. And this sort of slowness of it all coming back, and the things that you sort of process to live up to your commitment to yourself to make this a city again and be here again. You know, I found myself having some kind of unhealthy behaviors and just like feeling angry and like, I need an outlet, you know. At the time, I was in my early 30s, which is considered old age for rugby, by the way, in some circles. But I remembered that, and I had been searching for something different to do. I tried yoga. It just didn't fit well. I'm not very limber guy, and you know, I mean, I appreciate it, but it didn't have exactly what I was needing at the time. I'd go out for volleyball. You know, it's kind of like a social kind of thing, like beach volleyball. Just pick up. It's easy. No way am I coordinated enough to hit that ball over the net without it going this way or that way. And then I remembered rugby, and I found out there was a club, and they were just reforming after Katrina, as everything was back then. And I went out, and honestly, like, the second I got back on the pitch again and started dishing out and taking some hits and making the passes and running and then, you know, wearing the gear, the rugby shirts with the collars and the cleats and the big socks and like, and then being around guys who got it, and then finding out that there was a whole culture and a club around this thing, and then that, you know, going to training and going to games was part of it, but then like being together and kind of sharing this culture like throughout, I found a home. And I found that outlet that I needed for, I guess, what I would call aggression, or, you know, it was sort of this form of therapy that turned into something much bigger. Like, it was the place I needed to be, but then it turned into a permanent part of my life.
Sure. So I try to do something in every episode for my mom. I know my mom is listening.
Okay.
And I also know she doesn't know anything about rugby.
Okay.
So in case she's not alone, can you just describe at a high level the game of rugby?
Okay, the easiest thing I can say, like the elevator pitch on what this thing is, it's the sport that was the bridge between soccer and football, meaning American football.
Right.
So rugby is a British sport. It comes from the school of rugby, England, a school named rugby in England. And it basically was the evolution of, you know, think about soccer, football overseas, the rules of that. Now add, you can pick up the ball, and in order to stop you, they have to tackle you. Sounds a little like we're getting closer to football, right? But there's still, you can't throw the ball downfield. You can only pass it laterally or behind you. Nobody can be out front blocking with you. So it sounds like a bit like soccer, right? The composition of the forwards and the backs, and it's a constant. Everyone's on the field for the entire game. There's no division between offense and defense. All of those things are things that developed in America as rugby became American football. And now, if you want to see just how close that relationship is, think about these terms. What's a touchdown in American football? You get the ball over the line. It comes from rugby, because in rugby, to score, you have to touch the ball down over the line, hence touchdown. It doesn't mean any, it doesn't make any sense in American football. There's no touching. There's no down, right? But in rugby, which gave us American football, that's exactly what you have to do. In American football, we have the line of scrimmage. What does that mean? What is a line of scrimmage? Where else do you see that term, line of scrimmage or a scrimmage? You know, we knew scrimmage is like a game that doesn't count, right? What does that have to do with the line of scrimmage? It came from scrummage, which is the scrum in rugby, which if you've ever seen any kind of highlight of rugby, they'll probably show this. It's the forwards, the biggest players on the pitch, coming together in this, basically this two clusters of these opposing battering rams contesting for possession of the ball. And if you were to look at that from above and blow it up, separate those players so they're no longer bound together but actually like hold separate positions, that is the line of scrimmage about to begin the down, the snap on an American football game. There's a player in rugby that basically has the same role of the quarterback, where he distributes the ball from the big boys up front, who are your linemen, your blockers, you know, that kind of thing, to the faster backs. Okay. You know, in American football, the running backs, or the what evolved to be the receivers. In rugby, it's the big boys up front battling it out to get possession of the ball, and then you have your what we call the scrum half, who's distributing that ball, getting it out to the guys who are going to make a play with it. And so that follows the same basic tenor of American football. So it's really not that different from American football. One thing that people will note right away about rugby is there's no helmets, there's no pads.
Yes.
That's true. There is some light protective equipment that's allowed and actually encouraged, but this is not a game where you're clad in plastic. And as any football player will tell you, a helmet is a weapon. Once you're dressed up like this, you become this ballistic missile,
right?
Or this tank or this battering ram. So that changes the style of play. There's no downs in rugby. It's a sport of continuous action, continuous motion.
So more like soccer in that regard.
Exactly, like that. But yet it's continuous action with tackling and putting people to deck, as we say, like wrapping up and driving them down. And then after that happens, there's no whistle to say, okay, play's over, everybody pick yourself up, dust yourself off. Getting tackled is just the beginning of the next thing, which means you're contesting for possession of that ball. So there, in rugby, it's a grueling sport. It's an exhausting sport because you constantly are doing something. If you make a tackle or you get tackled, you have to pretty quickly get back up on your feet and make the next play.
Right.
In American football, you know, you see these big light out plays, you know, like you see somebody making a tackle from halfway across the field. Oh my God. And correspondingly, gosh, you see a lot of like pretty bad injuries, as somebody wearing a plastic helmet and shoulder pads coming screaming across the pitch with blockers and all this other stuff. Rugby is the contact is much closer. It's constant.
Sure.
It's tough, believe me. And there are some oohs and ahs, and you can hear those tackles. But it's a different kind of hit when guys and gals are not wearing that much protective equipment, and when you don't have blockers, and when that contact is coming from more like the distance between you and I at this table than 20 yards of a heads up.
Sure,
on
a couple
it, right?
of feet.
Yeah. It really is pretty close to football in terms of the action, right? You're trying to score a touchdown, trying to get past people who are trying to tackle you. You're trying to get crafty with how you distribute the ball. You know, the running back in American football making that break, you know, getting through the gaps and shedding tacklers. I mean, that's rugby. You know, that's what's happening right there. And instead of the pass coming from the quarterback halfway downfield to the open receiver, it is not the scrum half necessarily, but another player. Everyone's doing it, passing that ball, making a wide pass, and finding the guy who does have some space to run and gain all that territory. And that's what makes it so exciting and dynamic. For someone watching the game, there's always something happening. The ball is always in contention. You are never guaranteed of anything. This is not your possession. This is not your down. You have that ball for as long as you can hold on to it following the rules. And the other team can take it away from you any time that they can, right? There is a constant struggle. Every time there's a point of contact, a tackle being made, there are players grappling for possession of that ball. One side to keep it, the other side to take it.
Sure.
And so that, and when you're watching the game and you understand that, wow, there is something on the line with every move. And now for a player, what appealed to me, certainly, as somebody who I said, was not the most athletically gifted person, but, you know, I'm big boned, you know, like I like the physical contact.
Yeah.
I like the, you know, getting out there and doing my best. There's a place for you on the rugby pitch, depending on what level of rugby you're playing at.
Sure.
Because there's a place for guys who are big and burly. There's a place for guys who are speedy and crafty and have great hands. People think the best rugby players must be football players in America, right? Mm-hmm. Well, overseas, in places where rugby is religion, the best athletes are rugby players. But, you know, in America, it's often a crossover thing. People think, oh, well, if you're a great football player, you're going to be a great rugby player. Sometimes, not necessarily. Sometimes the best rugby players are basketball players. They come out of high school, college basketball programs. because they have the best hands, you know, and they're good in tight spaces. They're good manipulating that tight amount of space. Wrestlers, you know, high school, college wrestlers make fantastic rugby players because they have this idea of grappling with the other person, of using their own leverage, of, and frankly, the toughness, the get up and go toughness of it all. And so, so those are some of the crossovers. But for anybody who plays rugby, what makes it so special is how involved you are in the game. And actually, for American football players who come over, the eye-opener, the thing that makes them fall in love with it, is often that, oh, you mean I'm not pigeonholed to this position? You know, an offensive tackle is almost never going to score unless it's some crazy fluke thing, right? A receiver, a wide receiver, is not out there sticking guys, making tackles. But in rugby, every position on that field, whether you weigh 270 pounds or whether you weigh, you know, 175 pounds or a speedster, you're expected to make tackles. You have the opportunity to score. You're going to have that ball in your hands. You're going to make passes. You're expected to interact with your teammates. There's a lot of decision making that goes on. And that's what makes it dynamic and exciting. Yeah, there are skilled positions based on, you know, body type and size and all that. But also, you know, you're playing an 80-minute game. Right. There are some reserves that happen, but most of the players are going to play 80 minutes of a game that is constant and running around. And there are breaks, and we can discuss how that happens, because that's often confusing to people who are just watching it. Like, why did the game stop? And how the heck are they restarting it like that? But it's a game where you are moving and running around a lot. So you also have to be pretty fit to do it.
Yeah.
It's a demanding game.
Yep. You're welcome, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks for asking, Mom.
You mentioned Katrina. How much interest was there in rugby in New Orleans? Was there a rugby culture before Katrina in the city?
Yes, there was. So the short history of rugby in New Orleans, I mean, it starts in college, which is where most people in America, I think, intersect with rugby, or at least did for generations. College sport, you know, I mean, that's where it took root, and that's what gave us American football, you know? I mean, I went to Rutgers University in New Jersey. One of the first football games was was Rutgers versus Princeton, and it was a rugby game, and like that developed into American football. But I digress. In New Orleans, it came through the colleges, and particularly LSU. They had a big, they had a rugby program, let's say. And in the 1970s, a lot of guys who came out of that decided they would like to keep playing. They liked this, and they wanted to keep it going, so they started a club, the New Orleans Rugby Football Club, and that's what continues today. Mm-hmm. And when I was interested in exploring rugby, getting back into it, that's what I found, and that was the club. The universities had clubs, Tulane, Loyola. I think those were the only two at the time. But, you know, post-college, there was this club.
Sure.
And there still is this club.
Right.
But what's happened since is a humongous growth in rugby in New Orleans. And part of that can be attributed to the sort of the senior senators, the godfathers of the New Orleans rugby community, who seeded rugby into the high schools.
Yeah.
So a lot of the Catholic high schools in New Orleans have rugby teams. This led to people who did not just discover rugby in college, but actually started playing it when they were freshmen or sophomore in high school, and like had a couple of years under their belt by the time they got to college. And by the time they come out of college, they're not newbies. They've been playing rugby for a couple of years here, you know?
Yeah.
And then maybe they fold back into the club level, and that enhances the club. After Katrina, one important change was expanding the number of high schools that had rugby programs to include some of the charter schools that were part of the rebuilding and kind of just frankly return of public education in New Orleans after Katrina. And a lot of these charter schools, they didn't have the resources, the budgets, the wherewithal to field football teams, which are resource heavy. I mean, just think about the equipment.
Right. Yeah.
With rugby, as I mentioned, your main equipment are cleats and a mouthpiece, you know? I mean, that's really it. I mean, yes, shorts and a jersey, please. But other than that, we're not talking helmets and pads and all this other stuff. And so, I mean, I remember being part of drives where they were saying, hey, rugby community, next time you're at the store, buy a couple extra mouthpieces, put it in the sack for this team we're starting, you know? And it was people from the rugby community who were coaching and starting and recruiting these teams. And what you saw with high school kids who never even heard of rugby, but said, hey, you want to be part of a contact sport? You like football? Yeah, sure. Well, we don't have football. We have rugby. Here's the ball. You can go do this. Anyone on this team can score. Anyone on this team can pick up the ball and go with it. Anyone on this team can hit and stick. Believe me, that found an audience. And so you found these more high school players came through it with that experience. And so it grows. Now people have had more years in the game, and they start giving back because they appreciate it. They, like me, they appreciate what they gained from it outside of just the blood, sweat, and beers of it. They appreciate like the camaraderie and the things they learned and the gifts that they got from this sport and discipline of it. And they they started giving back. They started coaching. And so we have more and more teams. And so the club team started doing really well in the club level and went on to, you know, the club team would play initially other teams around the region, Baton Rouge, Jackson, Mississippi, the teams down the Florida, down the Gulf Coast, down to Florida and back over in Houston. And from there, you know, started winning that division again and again and moving up in the ranks. And again, this is club rugby. This is all amateur. You know, this is just people doing this on the weekends, taking road trips together. Pretty big commitment, but a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, training during the week, doing these games on Saturdays and the weekends. And this club team went on to win several national championships for club rugby in the United States at different levels. First D2, then D1, D2, D3, the D1 team, you know, top-ranked club level, got very high, up to the national championship level of competition, and this started attracting other people. What it also did was say, well, okay, the people who do want to play rugby more socially, but maybe aren't up for the level of training and travel that being a national championship level club rugby team takes, which is pretty significant, they still want to play rugby. So let's start other teams that they're just going to compete locally. Mm-hmm. And so today, the landscape of rugby in New Orleans, you have the New Orleans Rugby Football Club, which is the kind of the parent organization. That's the mothership.
Sure.
And then underneath that, you have a whole spectrum of teams that compete primarily against each other and with a few other teams nearby who come to New Orleans and trade travel trips. You know, these other teams go off to there. But we're talking day trips. This is not overnight travel or something. This is going down the coast or something.
Right.
And so it's made it to the point where there are, let's say, vivid rivalries amongst teams that are all based in New Orleans and play against each other on any given Saturday all through the fall. And then all this feeds up into the mother club, which competes in the spring, and it's done quite well with it because now there's this much more robust range of competition for people who want to be social and still get out there and play, stay engaged with the sport, and other people who are really highly competitive and want to be the best they can and move up in the ranks and gain attention. And that next level that we have is professional rugby. So right. New Orleans has the NOLA Gold, which is one of the inaugural teams of Major League Rugby, which is a new league that started about 5 years ago. It's been playing for 5 years, started about 6 years ago. New Orleans is one of the first when there was only a handful of teams. The league has grown progressively through the years with new cities joining. It's still a very new thing, but it is drawing talent from across the world, like people who played rugby in their home countries of South Africa, New Zealand, England, Ireland, Scotland, Argentina. You name it, across the globe, people who are steeped in rugby culture in countries where rugby is the number one sport now are in New Orleans playing professional rugby for the NOLA Gold, and that there is also a gateway for people who start out in high school and play in college and go into the club level and can actually become professional rugby players here in New Orleans. And there's a few examples of that.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I went to high school at Barth Martin in the mid-1980s, and there was no rugby team. The way I got exposed to it was a guy named Vincent Heller, who you probably know.
I know Vince. I've played with him very many times.
So my age, a little bit older maybe, his son went to Barth Martin, wanted to play rugby, I think, and Vince got involved in helping to coach the team. He played locally at the club level, and I think, like you said, there was plenty of that happening. People that were playing that were then going into the schools and trying to help drum up support and get a team started.
I think people are familiar with the term soccer mom. Or, you know, soccer family, let's say soccer mom, soccer dad, soccer family. There's rugby moms, there's rugby dads, there's rugby families.
Yeah.
And it's probably where soccer in America was a generation ago, where these moms and dads and families are sort of building the infrastructure now that already is pretty well developed for soccer.
Sure.
But it takes somebody stepping up and saying, oh, we're going to start this because I want my kids to continue doing this. And by the way, we're not just talking about sons. There's a women's team in New Orleans. There is a gay men's team in New Orleans, the Rougarou. All right, Rougarou. Now, all teams are open to anybody, but this is explicitly a team for gay men.
Right.
And many of them very, very new to rugby and come together and start this, and that is their own lens on the community part of it. And they are integrated with, party with, fundraise with, hang out with, and cheer with the broader rugby community, and that is something I absolutely love because that's part of rugby, is if you are part of this like I say, not mainstream in America, almost right. renegade kind of feeling thing. You have a connection to every other person who does that, men, women, young, old, whatever. You can talk rugby and in a way that sometimes the other people around you start like, all right, I have no idea what these people are talking about. Line out and scrum and kick to touch. And what is all this? And why is one of the players on the field named a hooker? What the heck is that going on? What is that about? So, you know, you share your own language, your terminology. But at the end of the day, it's very inclusive because you just need to show up. You know, if you can sure. do it, if you can show up. And like I say, you don't have to be the most athletically gifted person on the field. If so, I would have been laughed off the pitch back in 2006. Believe me, I mean, but if you show an interest in this thing that people care about, there's a pathway for you to be part of it.
Sure. If you come to New Orleans, or if you are a New Orleanian and your interest is piqued and you want to go see rugby, where do you go in New Orleans to see rugby?
Well, if you want to see it at the highest level, you go to the NOLA Gold, right? They play in Metairie at a former retired baseball stadium, now a rugby stadium. It's the gold yeah. mine on Airline. Some people still know it as Zephyr Field. Some people know it as the Shrine on Airline. It's the gold mine on Airline. It was designed for baseball. It's been converted to rugby, and that's the home base, and there's a tailgating scene. That season is winter through spring. So, you know, Major League Rugby is so new that, you know, everything, even schedules, kind of change up from season to season. But generally speaking, you can count on, like, from February to June is kind of the parameters of the season. And by the way, it being new is part of the excitement of it.
Right.
Like,
totally.
It's like you're watching this thing, like, grow and change.
Blossom.
And frankly, like, just progressively get better and better each season. Like, the talent level is rising. I mean, the people who have watched rugby are seeing people that they were cheering for or were their personal heroes maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago. They're still playing rugby. Now they're playing, you know, they're going overseas yeah. and playing at this level. Maybe their days of playing in New Zealand are done, but they're still monsters on the pitch for rugby and they're playing it here. But on a more regular basis, there's rugby happening all the time at City Park in New Orleans, in the mid-city Lakeview area. That's kind of the home base for a lot of these games. And in the fall, there is the Markell Cup tournament. It's named for Robert Markell, who is a longtime coach at Jesuit High School here in New Orleans. And he has his own cup named after him. He stalks the sideline over there. He's there engaged with the games. And this is some of the fiercest competition I've ever seen because it's an intra-city rivalry,
right?
There's teams like Crew, the Pontchartrain Po'boys, the Crescent City Blues, and they are, they're all part of the New Orleans Rugby Football Club at the end of the day, but when they're broken down into their individual teams, they are competing for that cup, and it gets fierce. And these are people who know each other and hang out with each other and drink with each other and make fun of each other and rag on each other, but at the end of the day, share this New Orleans rugby culture, which is really cool. I would say the home base off the pitch for rugby is certainly Finn McCool's Irish Pub. Mm-hmm. Also in Mid-City on Bank Street, it's a real deal Irish pub run by real deal Irish people. And if there are if there's rugby games on, no matter the time, they're on. This is the home base for Premiership football,
right.
Soccer, obviously soccer too. So, you know, if the game starts at 6 in the morning, our time from overseas, it's on and there is a crowd there. Really fun. And same goes with rugby. Rugby World Cup is coming up in the fall.
Right.
That's being played in France. So a pretty friendly time difference compared to some of the other Rugby
yeah.
World Cups. So these, you know, these will be games that are reasonable to catch, and Finn McCool's will definitely be home base for that stuff.
Yeah, a couple of things to unpack there. First of all, Finn McCool's is a terrifically fun bar in general, but if you are a soccer fan or a rugby fan, it is the place to go.
It's
in
the
city.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
You will find like-minded people there enjoying themselves, cheering, singing, the whole thing.
And what I love is you know, people, my friends from overseas tell me, like, there are scenes in that bar that you would never see back home overseas to them, right? Like the supporters of these different clubs being in the same bar and cheering side by side, whereas they would be sort of segregated, basically,
right.
into, like, you're a Man United pub or you're, you know, whatever. And so
there's one place.
Yeah, here they're all on top of each other. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's in a friendly way, and it's great to see. I mean, I look at Premiership Soccer the way that some people look at rugby, like, oh, I appreciate it. I'm not exactly sure what's going on or the nuances of it. But I love it for that reason of, like, just it's the passion of it. And that's what people will see when they come out to watch rugby with people who care about it.
Yeah.
I just tell people if you're trying to find out the very basics of the rules of the game of rugby, you know, pick a team. Hopefully it's the NOLA Gold. Every time the people around you are cheering, that means the team did something good. And every time everyone's booing or groaning, that means the ref really got it wrong. Nah, just kidding. The refs are extremely important in rugby. They get a hard time all the time, but no way the game continues without them. They have a huge job because the referee, again, unlike American football, think about it, it's two sides of 15 players each. So it's 15 versus 15. There's one referee.
Yeah, so that's a lot of activity.
Yep,
a lot
that
of
woman
action.
Or man is in the center of the action and has to supervise the entire game. There's a lot of intricate rules. Player safety is a very important part of this fast-paced contact sport. They have assistant referees that run on the sidelines and watch things, but it really comes down to that referee, that one referee, to maintain order in what is often called a barbarians game played by gentlemen.
Well, another thing I wanted to unpack from what you said is the stadium where the Gold play, it's a really great repurpose of a stadium. It was a nice place to see AAA baseball. And then the team moved away a couple years ago, and it just sort of sat dormant. There was a lot of discussion about what do you do with it. It's right next to the Saints facility.
Right.
It's right next to a really nice just recreational park. And then the Gold took over. And it is repurposed, so it's not built specifically for rugby. So there's a little bit of that, but it's a really nice stadium.
Yeah, it is. As like I talked about, seeing Major League Rugby grow and being, you know, watching the Gold and having a role in it, it's been really exciting because of the pace of the growth. A few years ago, you know, it's the team started out playing at Shaw High School, which is a high school in suburban New Orleans on the other side of the river. In a high school football stadium.
Right.
I mean, not even stadium. It was a giant bleachers, you know, and with a little bit of shade here and there with the trees. And, like, you know, that was for the diehards. Yeah, we have professional rugby in New Orleans. We'll cross any number of bridges or rivers to get there. But it was a harder sell for people who were like, I don't know what this is. I just want, like, a good, you know, afternoon or evening of entertainment with my family. Now, you put it in the current gold mine, this former baseball stadium, and wow, it really feels
it's
like
nice.
Big time now.
Yeah, it's a nice
and
feel.
There's concession stands and seats, and there's a tailgating situation, and it's and that's just the growth of the league. You see it across Major League Rugby; they're getting better and better facilities, more and more fan support, and it's, you know, people who love rugby find it and gravitate towards it. But it's also become much more of an experience for people who just, like I say, like they love sports, they want to do something, they want to take their family out. Yeah, it's inexpensive, it's distinctive, it's memorable, it's exciting, it's fast paced, and, you know, it's a quick game. It's over in 2 hours.
And you're seeing a high quality. I mean, not only the product that the Gold put on the field, but the league in general. It's a high quality league.
Yes, yeah. I keep on saying it, but the level of players that have been attracted to the league as it's grown, as their salaries have increased a little bit, as more resources have attracted themselves to the league, and as the word has gotten around, you know, some of the players, it's a very international squad.
So yeah.
You know, you're seeing people who came up through the club system, as I mentioned. You're also seeing people who, you know, you look at their resumes and they started playing rugby when they were 4 years old.
Right.
You know, that's a very different level of play. These are guys that come over from Australia who have played around the world, who, you know, and now they're in New Orleans. And I talk to them a lot. And believe me, it works both ways. They are, like, awestruck to be living in New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans is a bucket list city for a lot of people.
Sure.
And here are these, you know, typically younger guys making some money as professional athletes. And they're playing in New Orleans and going to Mardi Gras and getting, you know, their bye weeks or whatever, their off times or their off season times. They're living in New Orleans. Many of them are making homes here. They're giving back. They're coaching with the club team. So you see this progression and this spectrum of it all.
Yeah. And I've seen a couple Saints players go out and support.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're pretty into it.
You mentioned, the Saints facility is right next door there.
Right.
You drive to the stadium, you pass by the Saints and Pelicans facility. Yeah, there have been Gold players who have come out and gone for tryouts for the Saints because, you know, it's – some of these skills are translatable. You know, can you kick the ball 50 meters down the field?
Yeah.
You know, can you make a tackle, then run across the field, get back up and do something else? You're talking about a pretty special teams player for American football like that. We haven't seen anyone from Gold quite make that leap yet, but I think it's a matter of time.
It's coming. Yeah, definitely. And we should mention the Gold has a halfway decent broadcaster as well, right?
Yeah, well, so this is another thing I love about the Gold and about Major League Rugby is because it's a new league. It's a professional sports league, but it's also new, and it's New Orleans. And it's got a bit of a continuation of that club camaraderie to it. As you mentioned in the intro, I'm in media. I'm a food writer for NOLA.com. I do some broadcast work, some radio work. And so when the team ownership is forming up, the main team owner, Tim Falcon, local attorney, has done pretty good for himself, it turns out. He's a rugby fanatic, kind of the ultimate rugby dad. He started looking around like, okay, I've got this team. How do I staff it? You know, he picks his GM from the club,
right.
This guy, Ryan Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald, this Marine combat veteran who played rugby with me and like had gotten into professional sports, and you know, he's now the manager of this team, big position. He looked for who's going to do the grounds maintenance. You know, he found somebody in the rugby community to do that. And said, who does broadcasting? Oh, Ian. Ian's in the media. Like, yeah, guys, I've never called a rugby game before. I've never called any sports game before. I talk about, you know, gumbo and po' boys on the radio sometimes. That'll do. You'll learn. And so got thrown into it. But yes, I do the play-by-play commentary for the TV broadcasts on the NOLA Gold Games. And it is thrilling. It's also a humbling challenge at many times, but it's one thing to follow the game. It's another thing to call it in real time, as we say, a fast-paced game that doesn't take many breaks. I've learned a ton by doing this, by really learning the game beyond my own position when I was a player. I wonder if I could take my game knowledge now back to the days when I had a few more moves. I think I would have been a much better player. But it's a thrill to do it, and actually, it's really just an honor to be part of a team at the ground level like this.
Well, and it's fun to hear you announcing. I mean, when I first hear your voice on those broadcasts, I instantly think there's going to be a three-minute,
right,
thing about food. But I think that your background, that you have come up playing the game and enjoying the game, and as an adult playing at the, you know, at the, I don't know if it's intramural or club level,
club level.
You do come with experience, so you may be inexperienced as a broadcaster, but it's not like you're inexperienced with the game.
Oh, sure, I know the game, and I've endeavored to learn more about it, and I have a great broadcasting partner, my color commentator. Yeah. He's a local attorney, Jeffrey Ormsby. He knows the game inside and out. He can take it apart in ways that I just don't see. So we divide up really well with that, I think, and I just try to call the game so that if somebody is brand new to the game, they have a sense of what's happening. You know, why they blew the whistle, why they stopped, why they're upset, you know, why the fans are booing. And not just because the ref got it wrong. I'm just kidding, refs. I love you, refs. I'm just joking.
I also think, though, I mean, you know, many professional leagues don't last beyond their inaugural season.
Yeah.
And we're 6 years since formation, 5 years done now, right?
Yeah.
So it's coming along, and I feel like it's a little bit like soccer was maybe in the 80s in the United States, where it was just starting and kids were just starting to get exposed to it on a bigger level. And now you have, as you mentioned, here in New Orleans, you have most of the high schools, or many of the high schools, have a soccer have a rugby program. Excuse me. Then there's a really robust club level. So
yeah.
That's mostly played still out on Wisner Boulevard, right?
In City Park. That's right. Yeah.
So if you wanted to go check that out, if you're in town and you're a rugby fan,
yeah.
A pretty robust league playing there.
Yeah, that's right. There is, and you know, and that's a you know, walk on up to the sideline.
Right.
And, it's ice chests and you know,
folding chairs and beer.
Yeah. Pickup trucks parked in there, but it's an intense rivalry. It's fun, and you know, rugby is an accessible kind of thing. I mean, there are positions for all types of players and all ages, frankly. I mean, there's people who are playing who are right out of college in that club level. There are people who are older than me, and I'm thoroughly middle aged. and don't forget, even with Major League Rugby, one of those years right in the middle there was COVID, and they had to cancel the season a couple games in, and that could have been the death knell for many a fledgling
Definitely.
Enterprise like that.
Sure.
You know, you think about that, what stage of development it was at, but you know, the owners, the management, they made the commitments to stay in it, and they came back, and it's been stronger and stronger every year.
Mm-hmm.
NOLA Gold has yet to reach the promised land of the playoffs, but I think that's probably a season away. I think there's a ton of talent. It really is a pleasure to watch the league grow and to see the inroads in it. I mean, there's players on NOLA Gold. There's one in particular I'm thinking of. His name is Billy Stewart. I used to play with him on the club level. He's quite a bit younger than me, but he came up through Tulane University, and he just was a really good player, and he wanted to play at a higher level than what he was getting in college, and so he went over to the club team and played that for a while and developed and grew, and like, God, you see some of these guys hit some league growth spurts. He's a monster. Really nice guy, by the way, but a monster. And then he got picked, and he's a starter for the NOLA Gold. He's a professional rugby player in America. It's not a huge number of people who can say that.
Right. I also think one of the things that's alluring to me about rugby, again, someone who doesn't know a lot about it, is there is a real, maybe because it's still a growth sport in the United States, there's a real sense of camaraderie.
That is a characteristic of rugby around the
hosting game. Other teams that come in, yep. going to other places. There is the match on the pitch, but then there is really sort of a familial kind of experience.
And that, could, just to make it, you know, very personally, I mean, that was part of the appeal to me back when I was getting back into it, when I was looking for something, you know, beyond myself. You know, this is the competition aspect of it. And then, you know, win, lose, or draw, there's a high level of respect that is demanded in the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a game where you see flopping.
Right.
Okay? This is not going to happen. You know, we've all watched those games.
Right.
You know, some of these soccer players do pretty well for themselves, it turns out, and are pretty highly in demand and accredited athletes, and then they're flopping around. You know,
right.
Like, I don't know. That is not tolerated in rugby. That is enforced in ways that I won't get into here,
right.
But no one is going to want to see that. And is a respect thing. There's a respect for the ref. There's a respect thing for your opponents. And when the whistle blows, it's over. And even at the professional level, I mean, people who, this is their livelihoods, contracts are on the line, you know, they pat each other on the back, they shake hands with each other, they walk down the line, shake hands with each other. This is not just the quarterbacks running out,
right.
and giving each other a pat in the back, saying good job, kid, or the coaches doing the thing. It's the whole team doing that. And then there's typically a social afterwards, and the teams will eat together. This is at the professional level.
Right.
They're having a meal together in the facility, and each team is picking the best player, the player of the match, from the other team. So it's one thing for me as the broadcaster to say, oh, this is our MVP of the game. It's another thing for the people who are on the pitch battling it out to say, wow, I mean, you might have lost by 20 points, but, you know, your number 15 was giving us a headache all day, or we just had no answer for your number 2 or whatever. And it's not just like, you know, silver linings or something. It is part of the respect of the game. You see that at the club level too, and that was a real big part of what got me back into it and kept me into it personally, was that aspect of it. And the fact that you can be involved with these clubs even long after your playing days are over, because there's
sure.
a network of support that happens. People are plugged in still. It's not just, oh, your playing days are over, now you're a fan. You're part of a community, and that registers in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I think people are fervent about it long after they finish playing.
Bound in.
Is there anything else that you would want people to know about rugby in general or about the New Orleans culture in particular?
I think it's special down here. You know, rugby is growing across the country. It's the fastest growing sport in America.
Yeah.
And New Orleans has something special in that because I think of the social aspect that I just discussed. Let's face it, New Orleans does that
really well.
Really well, in a very genuine, authentic way. I mean, it's not made up. Like, we have different ways of engaging with each other. There's a real sincerity to it. I mean, a lot of what binds us together in this city, in this community, is that sense of we share this thing, we share this culture. You know, rugby is a microcosm of it that feeds into the larger idea of that. So there's, you know, people share this bond as being New Orleanians. When you're a New Orleanian who shares the bond of rugby, that's just another layer, and it's deeper and richer. And, like, you know, we bind up in rugby. That's one of the things that we do. We grab onto each
right.
other's jerseys and bind up for some of these moves, like the scrum. The whole idea of being part of a rugby culture, whatever level you come into it at, whether it's high school, college, club, the women's club, the men's club, the professional level, you're bound in.
Yeah. Ian, thank you so much for taking the time to explore rugby with us.
One of my favorite topics. Glad to talk about it. Thanks so much for giving it some exposure.
Yeah, thanks everybody, and I hope you'll check out some rugby, whether it's club level or it's the gold playing out on Airline Highway. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my girls to close this out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.